Following program is presented by True Kids One, broadcasting youth. True Kids One is an educational nonprofit whose mission is to provide New Mexico youth with media skills, tools, and opportunities which open career paths and promote digital citizenship. Find out more at www.truekidsone.org.
The opinions expressed in the following recording belong to the respective speakers and are not necessarily shared by True Kids One or KNCE.
On today's show, we will be hearing from youth as they talk to New Mexico Democratic candidates Christina Ortez, Roger Montoya, Leo Jaramillo about New Mexico, their visions, and how youth can become champions of their communities.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Christina Ortez. I am in Taos County, and I'm running for House District 42. I'm the Democratic candidate. I do have an opponent. Her name is Republican, but she's running as a Democrat in her platform. Talk to me later, and I'll tell you how she's doing it. I'm so thrilled to see all of you on this screen, the beautiful, amazing faces. I want to thank you for being here and devoting your time and your energy. Roger, Leo, and I have been working either in politics or peripheral to politics, whether we're advocating for issues or serving as a county commissioner for years. And I know, and I'm sure the others too know how critical it is that young people are part of the movement. And I know that the Democratic Party has not necessarily served you well, and we are here to change all of that. We are here to be inclusive, to listen to you. I have two small children, Vida, who's 6, Gillian, who is 9, and all I want to do is create a world that where they can find a good job, a safe place to live that's affordable, where they can do the things that they need to do, and they have control over their own bodies. And I think of the places that you are right now, and how different it was for me growing up, coming of age and finding a job and finding a place to live. And the challenges right now are so great. So we're here to fight for you. And I'm thanking you from the bottom of my heart for you being here tonight. And I can't wait to have a conversation with you. Thanks.
Thank you, Christina.
We can pass it on over to Roger now, if you want to go.
Sure. Thank you so much, everybody. Christina, that was beautiful. My name is Roger Montoya. I am 59 years old. If I'm elected, I will be 60 just before we're sworn in. The region, the vast region that I represent or will represent is ginormous. I mean, it's Pecos, it's Mora, it's San Miguel, it's up to the border of Colorado, Cimarron, Velarde, Alcalde, Chamita, Okewinge tribal community, Truchas, Ojosarco, and more. The responsibility that I feel right now at this point in my life as a mature leader with no political background at all, not even a treasurer in seventh grade, I never ran for any position, but I am called to action with the deepest, most potent joy and fire to serve and protect this place that we call home. I had a distinct opportunity last January to attend the State of the Union and sit in the gallery on the front row seat up on top and listen to the president speak about his perspective on the communities, the nation, and the challenges. And it was appalling to me. And I left, I sat with respect and reverence as my father and mother taught me, but I came back ready to defend, to be creative. I'm an artist, first and foremost, community activist for 30 years. I have worked mostly in education, nurturing and cultivating and loving young people and understanding the challenges that they face and their families face in a place where poverty is at once balanced by beauty and opportunity in the environment. where drug addiction and homelessness are balanced by querencia and the family and the traditions, the beautiful traditions that we hold in our DNA, where undereducated and poorly run school systems hold brilliant minds and the potential that give me goosebumps when I think of what they can become if we put the right recipe together to rebuild education and the economy. My message tonight to the young people on this call is, you are why I'm running. Absolutely. At 60 years old, if I'm elected and I spend 10 years, I'll be 70. You all must take the reins with your own voice and your own perspectives. And as a representative, my job is to listen quietly, to take my 30 years of experience, pray, and then act with righteousness on the environment, on education, on healthcare, supporting a woman's right to reproductive justice and the families that emerge from the sacred divine feminine. I will close with this statement. My mother and my grandmother, my father as well, I'm not to knock men, but there's a certain power in the women that I watched lead. Maybe it was because they came out of the Depression era, similar to what we're going through now, with such grace and determination and a commitment to collaboration and nourishment of community, not the dominance and the control of community. And I think that's the single most potent value that I live by and I will serve by in the State House. That's where I'll stop for now.
Thank you so much, Roger. Those are such lovely words. I'm going to pass it off to Leo. Go next.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Leo Jaramillo, and I'm a Senate candidate for District 5, which is a majority of Riobamba County, Los Alamos proper, parts of northern Santa Fe County, and a smidge bit of northern Sandoval County. And so, believe it or not, I want to start off with a story. But at the age of 10, I had a school teacher who taught us about the importance of being an elected official and what elected officials do in a community. And so she talked about how you could bring good to a community by giving of yourself as a servitude leader. So I remember during that week of civics, what we learned from her, I jotted down what I would think would be a campaign sign for me and knew I'd always want to be an elected official to help make change because of what she taught me. Now, fast forward all these years later, that school teacher wrote a letter of recommendation for me in an editorial in the Rio Grande Sun, saying she remembers when that spark was lit and excited that this would happen. And so, you know, times have really changed from when I was in school and even when I was in my younger 30s to even think about gathering with so many people in a virtual event. We would have had to have said, meet me at 6 o'clock at the payphone. If you're not there, I'm gonna wait for 5 minutes. And then if I'm not there, maybe I'm in the gym. So it's amazing that all of us are together. Now, the job of a New Mexico state senator is not only to represent the people of his or her district, but to represent every single New Mexican. And to know that the impact you're making in the state legislature isn't just for what's happening right at that moment, but generations to come. Until someone, the next leader comes to either build upon it or see a better way of making things happen. You know, I ran on a campaign to ensure that we had every child would receive a quality education. I'm a former educator who knew the issues that happened within a school. I'm an educator who had to leave education because I couldn't make ends meet with the pay that I received as being a school teacher and not having a family who could send me money or help me in any way. So I understand the issues teachers have both financially and the issues they face when they're in the classroom. When we look at our agriculture community and we look at water rights and what people fight for and what our history is in northern New Mexico with agriculture, how can we revitalize it? And how can you, as the next generation, ensure that when we pass it on to you, we know New Mexico is going to be in good hands? We then look at the areas of environment. How do we then ensure that we can go into green energy? We look at how do we diversify New Mexico's economy. One thing COVID has taught us is the oil boom was really good for New Mexico, but when we saw COVID hit, we really saw that New Mexicans suffered because we relied too heavily on oil and gas. So what we've got to do as leaders is find ways to diversify New Mexico's economy, ensure that we don't find ourselves in a situation like this, but that we truly move northern New Mexico forward. And you know what's so exciting is I get to help move northern New Mexico forward with Christina and Roger, two people I'm not only going to think of as colleagues, but people I think of as very good friends who I truly would trust my children with. And I don't have children, so my community is my child, and I want to make sure that I can raise that child the best way possible and leave it in a better state than I found it for the next generation to come. You know, and I'm really excited to hear from you because I want to know how I can represent you in the Roundhouse and what issues mean the most to you. So thanks for having me this evening.
Thank you for coming. And Leo, one thing that you said that I really appreciated was that message that you touched on of youth empowerment and activism. Because I think that it's really important that when we, those people whom we look up to, empowering the next generation of those to come to kind of take the reins. And I really appreciated that. And I can actually picture you as a young man speaking with your teacher, giving you that. And so with that in mind, what would you say to some of these young leaders that we have here on this call who may or may not even be thinking about this right now, but who know that at some point in time, they might have to step up and take the reins as you did before?
But you know, what's so exciting is you don't have to be an elected official to make change. So even just doing small things within your community will just gain momentum and change will come. And so your voice is strong. So you're never too young to think that your voice isn't strong enough. You own your voice. Your voice is strong. You can make change at any time that you want. And you can stand up for what you believe in. And so that's one thing I would urge you to do. You know, Roger and I have coached teens and children in the Espanola Valley for years. And the one thing that we can never, ever teach them is confidence in their voice, but you can help build that. And so by just doing one simple thing within your community, you're going to start building that confidence. And by the time you know it, we're going to be supporting you when you run for your Senate or representative election, because it all just takes one little act to get the ball rolling and to build momentum and then run with it. Your voice is strong, and I hope you use it.
Thank you. And then, like Sophia said, Christina and Roger, we want to offer the opportunity for either of you guys to answer that question as well.
Roger, should I? So there are two things. One, it is never too early to serve your community. I'm 46 years old, and this is a special, I guess I'm imploring the women that are on this call. You know, women have to be asked many, many, many times to run for office. 8, 9 times. I think I was asked, at least 10 to 12 times, maybe 15 times. Do it. Run for town council. Run for county commission. And I kept saying, you know, I've got too many other things going on, right? And really, that wasn't the true answer for me. The answer really internally was I'm too scared, or I'm too, I am too busy, but you know, really, like, I don't have the leadership skills. Those are the things I would tell myself, this internal dialogue that I wasn't good enough to represent the community or to listen. But, you know, I've been listening and representing my community. I'm the executive director of the Taos Land Trust, and I've been working as a conservation advocate, land and water and food and ag advocate for almost 20 years. And so, you know, I have been a leader in the food and ag sector, but it took me a while for me to think about myself as somebody who could be elected. So I would like for you to think of yourselves as the leaders of today, not the leaders of tomorrow. You are who we need. We need your energy. We need your forthright, hard-hitting questions. You're not afraid to ask us why we're doing things a certain way. You know, you don't get caught up in that wheel of, well, you know, it's been done before and it didn't really work, and so we shouldn't try that again. That's not something that is a part of your ethos. So really, that's what I will say to you is we need you to run right now. At every level of government, we need you representing the voices of this generation, your generation, right now.
Nice. Beautiful. I can add a little bit to the messages of my colleagues. Really, really, really lovely voice from Leo and the courage to take to the now. But I think most importantly, finding your unique voice is the most essential piece to cultivate, you know, with the fear and the unknown, knowing like, how do I fit in? What's my groove? I have used the arts for about 30 years in our region up here in northern New Mexico with Moving Arts Española and other endeavors. Art is a form of medicine. Not that every student we've touched is going to become an artist, but it's the self-discovery, the peeling back and paying attention to what makes you tick. If you can answer the question, why do I live? Why do I get up in the morning? What excites me? It's a simple question, but it's a hard one. And once you can answer that truthfully to yourself, your life will unfold, and it's called leadership. It doesn't have to take the form of a role in politics. It could be as a mother or an artist or a gardener. It doesn't much matter. What matters is that you're true to your fingerprint. There's no one like you. Adults like myself can have the distinct honor of loving you and nourishing you, but you've got to stand up on your own. And this is a great call. I can't wait to hear from the youth. Thank you.
Lovely words.
Oh, if I could just add something.
Yeah,
you know, go ahead. Because when Christina and I, we got to raft down the Rio Chama and talk about the environment with some environmentalists and geologists and really see what New Mexico needed, we talked about how do we identify who could lead Northern New Mexico next for us? Because we're not somebody who wants to stay rooted for all these years, but how can we build a foundation to ensure that we keep moving our districts forward and that we find people who definitely want to be in it? So one thing I failed to mention is I was raised in poverty. So I come from very humble beginnings. So with that, if you would have looked at New Mexico politics in the 80s, when I was growing up and in the 90s, you wouldn't think that somebody from humble beginnings could have that voice and be a leader, which is totally wrong, right? We need everybody who understands New Mexico, who has lived, who has experienced, to ensure that they can go into the roundhouse or any form of government and share their experience because they know what it's like to walk in those shoes. And so when we look at identifying people, it's identifying anyone who has a heart for the community, who's strong enough to have a voice for the community. So it's any one of you can be the next person who's going to lead, whether it's an elected office or if it's just leading in your community. So that whole stereotype of it was just one certain group of people who led is completely out the window because you're all leaders, we're all leaders, and we're in this together. We need to just make sure that we find the person with the heart and the ability and the drive to want to make sure we move Northern New Mexico in the right direction.
Yes.
I love that. These are such good words of advice, and you all have such amazing ideas. But I definitely want to give folks a chance to ask questions just as, you know, as they come. So if anyone has a question right now, I think the way that we're going to do it is just like a simple hand raise. And if you don't have the camera on, then I think there's a way to raise your hand on your like on Zoom, or you can just put a question in the chat and one of us can ask it for you. Does anyone have a question right now that they want to ask? Tina, go ahead.
Okay, so this is for Roger and Leo, because obviously I'm not as young as everybody else here, obviously. So I have two kids that are in school right now, and obviously I'm working from home. They are on the internet. And I don't know if you guys saw the report, but Española is ranked number 2 for the slowest internet in the country. So what are your plans to improve the infrastructure? Because right now, due to COVID, and, you know, thankfully so that our governor has been very vigilant in keeping New Mexico safe. So, you know, what are your plans for the internet infrastructure? And granted, I know that we're going into a session where we're not going to have much money, but what are some ideas that you guys plan to help us with our infrastructure so that, you know, a whole household can be on the internet?
Roger, would you mind if I take that first?
Sure. So okay.
The one thing that we definitely noticed, Tina, in in COVID. And so for everybody out there, Tina and I coached together before. And so it's good to see a good friend back, even though it's virtually. But the one thing we noticed during COVID was internet didn't only impact students on one end. On the opposite end, it truly affected our elderly population as well when it came to telehealth and ensuring that they could meet with their medical providers virtually. And so what we noticed was internet speeds aren't only slow, but the number of households that don't even have internet. So what I've done is I've reached out to Teresa Ledger Fernandez because it's going to be a lot larger than just working with state money to build the infrastructure for broadband and internet. So what we're going to have to do is we really are going to have to rely on our delegation at the national level to step in and truly help Northern New Mexico and the entire state. So if you look at Guyana is even just trying to get basic cell service, and that's cell service. They don't even have internet in most of those areas. So when we think about internet, it needs to be that we focus not just as a state, but that we get our national delegation to help with federal funds that will come in, because that's going to be a huge project to ensure that every New Mexican has the chance to be connected to the internet.
So I just have one more question. So granted, is there anything that we could do similar to what Taos County does through Kit Carson? Through Kit Carson, like I said, because I'm originally from Taos County, so my parents and a lot of my family still live out there, and they have an amazing infrastructure. And granted, I don't know how it is that it's run. Is that something that we could, in your capacity, Roger and Leo, to maybe explore with, with Hemis, to maybe see if that's something that we could replicate to do out here? Because granted, I think pretty much everybody in Rio Arriba County uses Hemis.
So what does Kit Carson do?
So Kit Carson does provide internet.
Broadband.
Yeah.
Yeah, broadband internet, and it's really fast, and it's really good.
It's very, very fast, very, very good. It's very, very expensive to connect to. They've done a lot of work with the PRC to reduce the rates, and they're getting federal funding right now. And I'm sorry to interrupt you guys. I think they've done an incredible job in meeting the needs, especially of the students and the families that have kids in school. Tina, I also have two children in school, and it is like, basically I can't do anything while they're online on their classes all day long. I have to do everything from my phone or use my phone as a hotspot, because if one more computer is on, you know, it strains the system and they can't hear their teacher. Mm-hmm. So it's super, mm-hmm. super challenging. And there's been a huge uptick in internet connectivity. And I know that Luis Reyes has worked with at the federal level to get some more funds, and has asked for funds from the PRC to also, provide, cheaper rates. But it is really, really expensive. And one of the ways that Kit Carson was able to get more distribution of broadband was through those ARRA funds, those, the recovery funds from when Obama came in 2008 and 2009, right? So that's one of the things that we need to push our delegation on.
Yes.
And Senator, the entire delegation, because we need that kind of recovery act again, and it needs to be specifically focused on, in tribal lands and in the rural America, because we are left behind.
Yes. I would absolutely reiterate all of those comments. It will take another big push from the federal government that Obama started. In this area, we have something called ReadyNet, and it was never quite ready. The final mile never happened, and it's going to take that big push that the Biden-Harris administration will be forced to bring through with infrastructure on many, many levels. And this, education is lo más importante. There's nothing more at the fore than preparing our young people. And if our connectivity is so poor, so it's absolutely a priority. Luis Reyes and the Kit Carson team in general, in many ways, are leaps ahead of the Hemis Co-op. And I don't want to trash any entity, I think we can be inspired by regional partners who are doing things differently and in some cases much better. And my hope is that we can cultivate collaboration and best practices and work as a regional force to bring equity to our families on many levels, not just broadband. I'll stop there because I think my colleagues really covered a lot of bases. Did we answer your question, Tina?
Yes, sir, you actually did.
Very good.
Awesome. Yeah, that was a good question. I know a lot of folks have been having that question. I've been having that question too. So thank you guys. And thank you for the detailed responses. Christina, did you want to go?
I think we need to also pressure the utilities and the, you know, not only him, the PRC, right, to make sure that they're, that this is like on their radar. You know, they're implementing the Energy Transition Act, but they regulate all utilities, including broadband. And they, I know they're doing all these things, but I think we can need to, especially because the PRC, I think if all goes well, or if all goes differently, right, they will no longer be elected. This will be the last election of the PRC. They're going to be appointed. So it's even more important that you get people who are on there that you guys should run, you know, or should get into a position where you can be put on the PRC, because we really need people who are justice minded, who are equity minded. And I think they're really good people on there, but I don't know if that's the driving force behind their service on the PRC, and we need to hold them accountable.
Yep. We're also here to represent rural communities. And I know that New Mexico is not exactly overpopulated to the terms of a Los Angeles, but the urban centers in our state get the lion's share of the attention, and we have to constantly, I'm going to be a thorn in their side to make sure that our communities are heard and served.
Thank you guys for that. Christina, would you mind defining PRC just for me and anybody else listening who might not know what that term means?
The Public Regulation Commission, right? The New Mexico Public Regulation Commission. I'm going to put their website in the chat. And they regulate utilities. They set prices for energy. You know, they work with the individual utility co-ops and utility companies to basically like allow them to set prices. And they'll regulate the environmental regulations that are related to power lines and things like that. They do more, and I'm looking at my colleagues to help me to help me out here. There's an election in November for the PRC, and Joseph Maeses, yeah, is that his?
The former mayor of Española is a candidate there, and I think he's a good man, and I'm really pushing for him to get in. It's interesting that those positions will be done away with, and this is the last time to kind of really push for real strong movement, and I think there's no better time right now. The recent vote that they took on the environmental issues of renewable energy in McKinley County was a really good indication that we are on a track to make the very most of the ETA. It's not perfect, but I think the vote was an indication of good choices ahead. I'm excited. Leo, anything to add?
I think you covered it, both of you.
Thank you. And I know that Maple Hawk had a question as well.
Yeah, you're muted.
I'm muted?
Leo. Oh, sorry.
I don't have
any. Leo was going to speak.
Okay. I know that Maple Hawk had a question, so if you want to ask that, go ahead, and then just feel free to address whoever you'd like.
Hi, I'm Maple. I think you're all great candidates. I've really resonated with a lot of the stuff you've said today, but I wanted to ask about what you all as candidates are going to do for mental health outreach in teens and especially in school, because I know that being in online school and being at home all the time has been really hard on the mental health of teens, you know, and adults, but is there anything that we can do in schools or just in our communities to help to offset that?
You're muted, Roger.
Yeah, I try to get that echo to go away. I'd like to start. I had the unbelievable honor of watching my mother work in this arena in public education. Her name was Dorotea Montoya. She's the founder of School-Based Wellness in New Mexico. And she devised a model that looked at public health through the medical needs of kids, but then she expanded to behavioral health and parenting classes and so much more for about 30 years. And the success of her work was really listening to the youth and then bringing services to the school. She got in a lot of trouble, good trouble, and she made big changes over time. She listened to so many layers of issues and was so calm in her demeanor, but so powerful in her invitation to bring the right configuration of providers to the school setting. There's a movement right now across the nation and in New Mexico, community schools and communities in schools. And it's a powerful potential resolve that looks very much like my mother's model back in the 80s and 90s, where school-based wellness is derived from a team of specialists. Call them social work, wraparound services, the social determinants of health are served in the school setting where young people are referred and nourished in a way that's appropriate for their situations. I know that's not addressing the notion of the COVID focus, where now we are all feeling this grief and disconnection and fear. In many cases, I have it. It comes up almost daily. I want to see our kids again. I want to know that we're going to be safe. So I'll stop there and allow others to fill in. But I really believe, just to reiterate, that the school setting, education in general, has to be reconstructed. I do not believe that the model we started 100 years ago or more of a factory model with four walls where everyone is supposed to be the same will ever work again. The world as classroom. We don't have anything on the canvas right now, and I'm happy for that because we can redefine it as we move back into education. And I hope we don't go back to what we had. So I may have gotten off a little bit of track, Maple Hawk, but I will stop there.
No, that was great. That was exactly perfect. Thank you.
You know, Maple, for the first time ever in the Espanola Valley, we're addressing mental health. And that's something that hadn't been addressed in a long time. And so as the chair of the Riva County Commission, we saw the correlation between behavioral health, mental health, and addiction. Coming from a community that is definitely, definitely struggling with an addiction issue, we had to find ways on how to tackle that. When you look at mental health in school-based programs, it's mostly in urban settings where you find mental health counselors that come in. And so we need to find those models in a way to bring them to rural northern New Mexico so that our teens can get the right mental health they need. And so most mental health is brought up by the age of 14. People can start seeing the behaviors of those students who need the help that they deserve. And so in the education settings, we need to ensure that we have the properly trained people, the providers who can work with school staff to ensure that every student has the ability to access somebody, a mental health professional who can guide them through school and help them as they transition into adults, into members in the society. But what we have to do is definitely make sure that those providers are in the school and that they're talking to the schools, and that the student isn't left, there's no cracks for a student will slide through, but that we make sure that that student is taken care of since, let's just say, the age of 14 through high school, and if need be, that we transition that student in adulthood with mental health providers who can continue to assist.
Nice.
Oh, so I don't know if I could say any more, but I will say this. A couple of months ago, I was sitting down with Ted Wired. Ted Wired is a pillar of the community here in Taos. He has he's created a behavioral health facility, mental health facility called Golden Willow. Works a lot with folks through grief, and he really is one of the leaders on behavioral health and mental health issues in our community. Taos, he let me know in this conversation that Taos is so far behind Rio Olivia County when it comes to giving voice to the behavioral health and mental health crisis that is occurring in our community. We don't want to talk about it, but it is here and it is huge and it affects everyone at every level. So what he told me that day when we were sitting on his couch, because my children were in therapy with some, you know, with their therapists who were student therapists who've graduated and are helping my children through the things that they're dealing with, right? And I come from a place where, you know, my family felt a lot of shame and talked couldn't even imagine having a conversation with someone outside of the family about the things that are going on in us internally. So, you know, for many of us, many Chicanas and Chicanos and people of color, therapy is something that, you know, it's really hard to wrap our heads around because of all the shame and all the family shit that, you know, that we have to work through, you know. So when I think about, you know, taking my daughters to therapy, and when I was sitting there with Ted Wired, and he told me, if we want to affect real change here in our community, if we really want to tackle the behavioral health and mental health issues that are occurring, we need an investment of at least 40 more people, 40 more therapists in Taos County who are trauma-informed, who are, you know, asset-based, who really, you know, and who look like the community that they're working with, right? That is critical. If we just want to crack the nut on behavioral health issues in our community, we need at least 40 more people, right? So that's really, you know, I think about that. I think about what we can do with the legislature, right? You know, we starting with early childhood education, ensuring that there are people, that there are supports in the early childhood education realm who can start working with our children and their families early on in this trauma-informed way, right? So that we can lower the bar and reduce the barriers and the shame and all of that around mental health issues. And the thing that we must do, Leo and Roger and I, is work together to ensure that those dollars are coming back to our communities, and that we have shared, you know, understandings between Rio Riba and Taos County, right? So that we can share resources. Because Rio Riba, you guys, you're doing it, right? But we're not in Taos the way we need to. And so we're taking some cues from Rio Riba, but we've got to work together to bring that money and reduce, you know, and ensure that there are people who can serve our communities. And I'm so glad you asked that question. I mean, I'm in therapy. I've been in therapy now for like 25 years, you know, and I can't even imagine. I remember once I thought, well, maybe I'll stop therapy like after I'm cured, right? Cured? No, it is something I can't even imagine, not having somebody who is trained to help me work through the things that I'm working through forever. I'm not afraid of it. So we got to reduce that stigma.
Well, thank you for addressing that and answering that question. And also, by addressing that, you really are breaking the stigma and helping to achieve that goal. So thank you guys for that. And I'll let you move on. Sorry to take up so much of your time.
Don't be sorry, Maple. We loved it.
Yeah, that was a great question. Justice, I'm not sure if you wanted to jump in. You're frozen on my screen, but that might just be my Wi-Fi. But I know Harvey had a question. Or Justice, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I can definitely go ahead. My question was actually, I mean, and it's a question for all three candidates, but it was sparked specifically by Christina. Christina, you spoke about Ted Wired, and Ted's a longtime friend of mine. And coming up, I went to high school in Taos, grew up in Taos, split between Taos and Atlanta. You know this, other people on this call don't. And I spent a lot of time in Taos working in the mental health sphere, as well as across the state of New Mexico and nationally, as well, way back when. Specifically, I'm curious, what are your guys' thoughts about utilizing youth as ambassadors and youth as leaders in their community to help tackle these mental health related issues? Because I remember one thing that struck me so heavily when I was doing this work throughout the state and around the country was that oftentimes it feels as though youth are talked to about mental health, if that, but rarely are they talked with about mental health, and those being a little bit different. Rarely do we ask the youth what they need or what they see. And oftentimes what you'll find is that a young person is more likely to speak to one of their peers than they are to speak to this person or that person. So how can we utilize young people as leaders in their community to help their communities grow and to affect change there?
I'd like to start. Over the last 15 years at Moving Arts, we didn't intend this to happen, but it was just the process of nourishing young people for over a decade at a time. And this is, 150 youth, and many of them who emerged successfully from trauma and violence and drug addiction in the home. And so inadvertently, we saw directly, not in reading a book or reading a white paper, but seeing the process unfold before our eyes, that if you invest in a young person and they actually find the resilience and the healing, they can be the best ambassador, as you say, peer support networks, certified peer support, an entry point into social work as a launching point. There's one gentleman at Moving Arts who is an extraordinary leader in that capacity, and it's because he has the lived experience, the empathy, to bring it forward, and he chooses to bring it into the realm with small children and training them in acrobatics. But to watch him work brings tears to my eyes, because right there is a transmutation of deep lived experience and pain into service. So to answer your question more directly, an example, we have a program, one of the only counties in the nation, there are two, called Recovery Corps. It's much like AmeriCorps, where young people are invited in who are coming out of a trauma-informed setting, drug addiction, sometimes incarceration, and they're willing to enter into a partnership for their future. And it's working. It's not perfect, but it's showing results already. And it hinges on that notion of lived experience and going into that pain and healing and bringing it forward. So to answer your question, I think there's an enormous potential, particularly in Española, where drug addiction and the trauma-informed setting is something we've become well known for. I see it as a potential industry for healing and education.
And the piggyback off of that is, I agree, if we allow peers, peer-to-peer and that interaction to happen, that helps. But we also need to support those peers who are taking in, listening to all of these stories that are coming in, to find ways that they can also release, because some of these peers might start carrying that baggage, and that's going to affect them personally. So not only ensuring that these peers are helping the other students, but then how can we help that peer to unload the information that's been coming to that one peer is another thing you'd have to focus on.